Hi, this is the Golden Thread Conversations, and I'm your host, Judy Murdoch. Today, my guest is actor and screenwriter David Austin Veal. David Austin Veal is a SAG and AFTRA actor and writer living in Los Angeles. He's acted in several award-winning indie films and television shows. When he is not acting, he is writing screenplays. He has several ongoing writing projects, including short films and features. I know David from his time living in Denver, Colorado, where he ran a successful freelance graphic design company. One of my favorite memories is asking David what inspires him, to which he replied, "Everything." According to David, every day is a great day to create, to mentor, to be an active part of the fabric of our world. I love your philosophy, David. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's Thank lovely. You, Judy. Do you remember when you told me that everything inspires you?
Yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah. I don't remember the very moment and everything, but
we were having coffee.
Yeah. Oh, that was I miss Colorado. I miss
Do
everything.
You? I know. Do. I miss you being here. Up until like 2 weeks ago, I always thought, oh yeah, David's just down in Highlands Ranch. No, I could stop by.
Yeah, we moved in 2014, I can't believe how much time passes quickly and all of that.
Yeah. Do you want to go a little bit more into, you had a very successful graphic design company, and I think, you know, you and I pitched something together, and I was like really impressed by kind of how well organized you were, and you seem to be doing quite well. So I'm really curious how you
Thank you.
You know, yeah, like you made the segue to the entertainment industry, which it's still creative, but it's a really different way of being creative.
I should step back into the past just a little bit. The 30th anniversary for my wife and I, it'll be coming up this September 22nd.
Beautiful. Congratulations.
Thank you. And we met each other acting at the Eden Community Theater in Denver, Colorado. It was back in the we were married in 1990, and we only had about 6 months of dating, of any of that.
Love at first sight, huh?
That's it, yeah.
So
And
sweet.
So we knew right then and there that acting was something that we both enjoyed a lot. But there's no, I should be careful. There was very little industry at the time. I don't know how the industry is right now inside of Denver, but for acting, there wasn't anything to really, you know, support that. And I had taken a few lessons and did some improv lessons at the Comedy Works back when it was in Larimer Square and all that. Bringing it up to date and all of that, I basically, of course, went. And my other first love, of course, is graphic design and that kind of storytelling. And that's the through line with what I do is storytelling.
That's excellent.
Because if you think about it, the graphic designers are trying to help businesses tell the story. So,
that's right.
Yeah. So
thanks, David. That's actually that's a really good way to think about it.
At one point, of course, we had a son, and our son decided, I have to say, Patty is an only child, and my son is an only child. And my son decided that he wanted to learn ballroom dancing. He just loved Dancing with the Stars and all of that. And he's autistic, and his particular autism, his thing is that he's gifted with the ability to see something and retain it forever, but it also went into coordination.
Oh wow!
So he took lessons at Adventures in Dance in Littleton. Holly Collins is the owner out there, and of course I met Holly through I should say the Centennial Chamber of Commerce, and back in the day, And at one point, Jeremy, though, my son wanted to learn from one of the stars of Dancing with the Stars.
Cool.
And being an only child, his mom an only child, when they told me that we were going to California to Hermosa Beach to learn at Adventures, I mean at I'm sorry, at You Can Dance Studios with
Wow.
Anna Tribbins. Oh, I can never say her name.
It's okay.
Okay, wait. Anyway, the redhead from the day, Chambaskaya.
Oh, okay. Nicely
Yeah,
done.
we what I should say, my wife and my son went there a few times to make sure, and then we moved out to California altogether and settled down in some place called Rancho Palos Verdes, which is really close to Hermosa Beach. It's really close to the harbor, LA Harbor. And the next year we moved down to San Pedro. And my son, in total, had spent 9 years in ballroom dancing.
Wow.
A few years ago, he retired, but we're still here. And I
Wow.
found that I had to retire from graphic design because when I came out here, it was hard to just restart a business. And
Yeah.
I had burnt out actually after 30 years of graphic design.
Yeah.
And
I can believe it.
all I had to do is take one acting class. I was hooked. So there's an industry out here for acting, and it made sense. And it's been gangbusters ever since. It's just been a lot of fun and work. And there are open areas where you do absolutely no work whatsoever, so it's good that we have other income. But other than that, it's quite a learning experience and great for the storyteller inside of you.
Yes. Yeah. That's really cool. I'm glad that, you're having fun. I mean, isn't that what it comes down to? I mean,
I
seriously.
think that happiness is what, yeah, that happiness. Sometimes you get a lot of rejection as
Yeah.
well, but having a freelance graphic design business is really similar to having a freelance acting business.
I believe that.
Yeah.
Do you find then I kind of as I go back and forth between graphic design and sometimes in some ways I really love it and it's probably one of the parts of marketing that I love the most because as you said it really is about telling a story and it's also about for myself, at least, it really is kind of like delving into the essence. I work primarily with small businesses, so it is kind of going into really what delving into like the essence of what makes the business what it is, what is it about the owner or owners that is distinctive, because ultimately, at least to me, that's what your brand should reflect. And
Yeah.
it can be even the most mundane business, right? It could be a florist, it could be a mortgage broker. It doesn't matter. There's still something in the owner usually that just kind of makes them special and interesting and something you would want their clients to know about them. And at the same time, I have found that a lot of businesses don't want that, A lot of businesses, I mean, right? I mean, a lot of businesses just kind of, you can say to them, hey, like this is what makes you guys special. I had one business, I had a client who I just said, like, you guys care. And that's what's special about you. And that is what your clients say time and time again. And they were really uncomfortable with that. They just said, like, can we just go back to being the experts? And I was like, yeah, sure. You guys can go back to doing that. That's fine. But it's not what makes you special.
Oh, it is interesting. If I were to relate that to what's going on right now with acting, it's almost like being an illustrator, which I also did too, and all. There's the things that, just because of who you are, you're going to have a certain comfort level in how you do things, just because of who you are. For example, if I go into a casting call, an audition with 20 other people who surprisingly look a lot like me, but it's true.
That
Oh
must
my
be
God.
that must be so weird, David. I can't even imagine.
It's very weird. There are some casting which demands that they get people who are very different or whatever. But usually you get people who are same height and same almost. It's scary. Anyway, it still does not stop that thing that makes who you are come through. And it's just impossible. You can't just take a I'm a not a me pill. And if you try not to be yourself when they actually demand and actually are looking for you, they're not looking for you to be the character of something else, which I mean that happens, but they want you to be who you are, then it's impossible for you to get, well, it's not impossible to be miscast, but it is possible for you to get around the fact that,
That's
for example,
interesting.
if I crop my hair, I look like a really mean general. I look like the guy who can lead an army and all that. But as soon as I talk, hey, how y'all doing? It's like, well, you're the kinder, gentler general. We're not really looking for that.
Now I hear what you're saying. Yeah,
It's a
that's
comfort,
no, I do know what you mean. That's really interesting. Do you think that it seems like there are some actors who are really able to, it's sort of like they're still able to kind of bring their essence to the role, but at the same time, it does seem as though they're able to put the skin on of the character. And it seems like a really tricky thing to be able to do. You know, like Tom Cruise always seems like Tom Cruise, no matter what he's doing. But then there are actors
I mean that's
I'm just like thinking particularly like Shakespearean actors. I always comment about this when I'm watching something that they still seem to be able to sort of like put the, you know, step into the skin of the actor and portray them with like a huge amount of empathy and understanding.
I think that when you're casting as you, that is what works. I work, I take classes at a playhouse, and the playhouse works with scene work, meaning that you are introduced to different playwrights, or you are to go out and get plays yourself, and you go on stage with the other person, sometimes two people, sometimes it's a monologue, and you deliver the lines, and you try to be in the moment, and you try to do all of the 20 different things that they tell you to do, but it's a process and you learn it very little at a time and then you get better at it and better at it. But really, the time when you move the other 20 students who are sitting in the seats, and the only time that you really move the audience of hundreds of people when you're on stage or in front of a camera is when the character that meets your casting, meets who you are, meets the essence of you. Oh my God, then you have so much power over the audience. You move them, they cry for you. When the right actress is playing the daughter who is about to die in the arms of the right actor playing the dad, you cannot get away with not crying and getting into it, and oh my God, she's dying, and all of that. It's even though I know as an actor that they're going to have crafty next. Crafty is a table where it has lots of food on it. It's craft services. I don't know why they call it crafty. The crafty table is like, you get your food off, in between shooting and all of that. You're lying around waiting for the director to say, come on in and do your stuff. You can munch food at the crafty and then go and die in the arms of your dad and then go back and get a tootsie roll or whatever.
Oh man, that's like I that is art. I mean, that is art. That is art and craft, I guess. So, because I could say more. I would like to ask you about, if your fairy godmother came down and the stars align, and what would be like the project of your dreams? Like, what kind of a project would you like if you had all the right resources and stuff? You'd really love to do it.
That is really a good question. As a writer, I would love to have a feature based on something that I wrote. As a playwright, I would love to have an opening night of a play that I've written. I would love both of those to move people. So the stars have to align because, when you write for a movie or TV, 30 other people are into the writing. So you didn't really do that much as a writer, but you started the ball rolling, and that's all good. As a playwright, you are the king. You are the one who tells the director, okay, well, I agree with this, I don't agree with that. And if you're smart, you'll listen to everybody and you'll get a play. But as an actor, I would like to have one of those moments in a movie that is the key moment where the people have, it's the touchdown moment. I want people, I scored a touchdown. I want people to have that moment where they go like, oh my God, and they just die with me, or they scream with me, or whatever it is. I want to take them with me. I want to make sure that I have that power and that I use it for good, but I use it. If you had asked me that 10 years ago, I would have put that in terms of graphic design because that was my thing. And I think we're only talking about work. We're not talking about the other aspects of my life, of course.
It could be personal. I mean, it could be personal if you want to. I think at least like in creative work, I sometimes feel like the line between personal and professional is a little thinner
It's
because
super
we bring so
thin.
much of ourselves to our work.
Yeah, we do. And it's super thin when you are giving that service, when you are the person, you are the product, you are the
Yeah, exactly.
and somebody walks into your store and they love the stuff that you sell, but they really love you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
Yeah.
you're right. I think that's the thing. That's the magic. That's why I used to use the phrase "ignite your mojo" because, I think somebody, you've probably been hearing some stories recently about how like some bar that's been in Boston for like 40 years is closing because they can't stay in business. And people are just
Yeah.
heartbroken, like I don't know if you remember the Paramount Cafe that was in Lodo, or not in Lodo, it was on 16th Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're closing, they closed their doors. And I don't think I've had more than one meal there, but it's kind of a landmark. And that just makes me so sad. Like I feel like I'm losing like a part of something really precious.
Yeah, and it's almost like you want a COVID restart, a restart up
I
fund, a
know.
restart up a gigantic movement of some sort for the businesses that are just,
I know.
damaged so much. But that whole thing is a completely different thing. That whole thing, you get me going, and
Yeah.
that's all we're gonna talk about, which is
No,
cool.
that's okay. But we were talking a little bit about like project of your dreams, and you were saying, well, this is mostly professional. So do you have like something more in your personal life that you would really love to do if like the
It's
stars
funny,
aligned?
as I sit here right now, they are almost the same thing. Because it's very personal. If I were selling widgets, the famous widgets, the nails or lumber or something like that, it might be something more to do with having a really great barbecue, but having nothing to do with. But now, actually, I have an opportunity, like everybody else who writes, and everybody else who, I mean, there's some novels that have changed the world, and there are some really great movies out. There's always great movies out. And there's,
True.
that's, to me, I think that's what we're all aspiring to as storytellers, is that we're looking for that moment, and it's very personal, and it crosses over from business to personal. In fact, if I make money on what I do, that's actually the bonus.
Is that like the best? I know for me, that's like frosting on the cake. It's just
It's
like,
frosting on the cake. Yes, it's
yeah,
frosting
you
on the cake.
know. Yeah, it's all that much sweeter. But the thing I keep hearing you say, David, and I can it resonates deeply for me, is this idea of really, like a true heart to heart, human connection with other people. And I resonate deeply with that. I think I highly, highly value that's the type of connection that we make with other people. And I'm a, as a painter, I'm doing a lot of painting these days. I, you know, it like I tend to paint stuff I love, and nothing makes me happier than when somebody says, "Oh, I really love that. Oh, that's really cool." What I'm painting right now, which is like, I think everybody would think it's the weirdest thing except me, is I wander through the alleys in my neighborhood. I live in an old Denver neighborhood that houses go back about 100 years. And so, not surprisingly, the alleys are very interesting, because you, unless you have somebody who just like came in, literally scraped the property and built from scratch, you kind of have these interesting layers of stuff in people's yards. So they may have like a really old garage that, once upon a time, maybe, horses stayed in there. Just all sorts of crazy stuff. And I'm always so fascinated. It's like this treasure that nobody knows about except for me. Because most people I know are just like, no, don't go down an alley. And I'm like, but that's where all the cool stuff is. So I've taken a lot of pictures. People have their campers, all sorts of crazy stuff back there. So I'm doing a little series called Alley Artifacts. And that's what I'm painting. And my husband looked at it and he's just like, those are palettes, Judy. Like, okay. It's like, dude, but they painted the palettes. They're really cool. So anyway, when I'm finished, it's always a picture's worth a thousand words. But bottom line is just like, this stuff makes me happy. I figure it'll make some other people happy too. And if it doesn't, no biggie. I won't be painting alley stuff forever. But isn't there something to making other people happy through your art?
There's everything to it.
Yeah, it's so
I think that's
sweet.
the
There's
way
such a
that
sweetness to that.
we talk about introverts, extroverts, and there's certainly enough introverts in acting and
Yeah.
in writing and all of that. And it's the way to reach out inside of somebody. It's reaching out to their heart,
Yeah.
and giving them either something new or just something validating.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Can you share maybe a little bit about, are there any actors or writers in particular who you mentioned that, you used the word mentor, and do you have mentors? Like, who are people that like you, either they directly mentor you or indirectly, because you sort of look at their work as the type of work that makes you want to do better.
Well, just about every acting instructor that I've ever had, that is for sure. I've gotten lucky. I haven't had any of the people who are out there to just, they're more interested in their dollar line than they are in process. And people that I've been able to learn deeply about myself by, by following some of their advice, and but be also being allowed to make my own decisions. There's a lot of critical thinking that goes into acting. When you see somebody, I have so much respect for actors now. I have so much respect for actors. Actors are scientists in this world. They are researchers. They are, they're so, we're taught to be smart, and we're taught to make choices, and we're taught to see different perspectives, and we're taught to drill into what the meaning of intent is. It's really a fascinating place. A place to be. My mentors, boy, Robin Williams is my spirit animal.
Oh man, I was just thinking about Robin Williams when you were talking about that for some reason. I don't
Well,
even know why. It must have
I
been
go right
like.
into him really fast. It's like, if I'm not careful, a couple of auditions that I blew that were not so great, or the audition people had the same thing. It's, like Robin Williams.
Yeah. Yeah,
And then
I see that. I see that, David.
I
Because
said, how can
Robin
I get away
Williams
from that
had
and be
this.
like, how can I be like David Veal instead of Robin Williams? And it's hard.
You're right. Like Robin Williams had like this total manic insanity, right? But he was also like he had this very there was a very gentle person underneath it. And he was really great at sort of holding both.
And he the fact that he was fearless, the fact that he gave so much, and even though it seemed like he was here and there, he was here and there with relevance, with a gigantic bucket of humanity to
Yes.
resource inside of him. He could pull
Absolutely.
out I he could pull out this Soviet Russian type of thing
Yeah,
that he
that's
would be
right.
doing. And he, oh, very, very good for you. These
Yeah.
little words, the way he would do things.
Right.
But
Yeah.
he would bring it into a context that was social. Are you, even if it was frivolous, it was so much fun to see the frivolity that you were taken aback. And him and Jonathan Winters, those are so classic, the little interactions that they had. Danny Kaye was a big early inspiration. Red Skelton was a was a
I
was
remember Red Skelton. I remember
yeah
his I used to watch his show when I was a kid.
yeah now he's an evil person in the Avengers movies, but that's not the point. Oh, so you have to see Captain America to know that one. It's a Red Skull is what
Right,
it
right,
is.
right, right. No,
Anyway.
no, I hear what I'm tracking where you're, I'm picking up what you're laying down.
But Tom Hanks, every way, when he goes into something, it is deep and meaningful, and it is as far as the technique that he uses, and
Did
I've
you
seen.
I can't help but mention It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. I assume you saw that.
Don't assume. I'm so bad. I'm gonna
You
watch it
have
right
not?
now.
Oh,
I
you
can't
should see
right now.
it.
I don't care if it's
No.
$30. I'm going to, right after this interview, I'm going to
Okay.
watch
You will
that.
I mean I really like Tom Hanks and I didn't know anything. I knew very little about Mr. Rogers, and I used to make fun of Mr. Rogers when I was younger because I was kind of grown by the time there,
Sure,
Mr.
sure.
Rogers' Neighborhood was around. And I was so deeply touched by that movie. It was a very, I would say that's like one of those films that, even though in a lot of ways it wasn't necessarily my thing, I was just so deeply moved by Tom Hanks. His performance of Mr. Rogers and simply experiencing Fred Rogers as a human being. I won't say very much more about it. You should just see it and see it for yourself. But it made me feel or kind of like think about the world in a different way. And even though there were some people who had criticisms about Tom Hanks, his performance, I was like, the point wasn't for him to have a perfect performance. The point was, I think, for him to really channel the spirit of Fred Rogers, and I think he did a beautiful job doing that.
Which is tell the story, you know. That's the whole thing, is the keep true to not only what's written, bring your essence in, all of that sort of. And there's a reason why he was cast. He didn't have to be cast there, but there's a reason why he was cast, something that he did that, I don't care if you're an A-lister or not, you still need to audition. For the most part, unless it's your project or somebody has, the money is going to come in because you're in it, and those usually have a real tough time. But yeah, it's if we it goes back to what we were talking about. You can only believe it if that person can deliver it as from themselves.
And there was an interview with Tom Hanks about his experience in the role, and he shared some things about his personal life, in particular, some experiences he had as a kid. And he actually, growing up, had kind of a rough family situation. It wasn't like he didn't grow up in a real nurturing kind of family situation. And he said, that experience would leave a lot of people sort of bitter, but for whatever reason it didn't. It didn't leave me that way, I think, and it made me more empathetic and more compassionate. And he related that back to doing, acting as Fred Rogers. And I could I it made me appreciate his performance all the more.
They say that I learned early on, acting is not pretending. When your character hurts, you viscerally hurt. When I don't mean like when somebody clobbers you over the head, that was a rubber hammer. But as far as that rubber hammer hitting you in the head, as far as you're concerned, it was a real hammer. And you can really get into some problems with the empathy. I've had some real problems with empathy where I've had to be the bad guy. I had to be the one who was a victim, or I had to be somebody who had an epileptic seizure from poisoning and then had to actually die. Take five was tough on that one. Because, hey, guess what? The camera's right there in your face, and you're not going to kid around. You actually have to reset and reset and reset and
I'm
move other
I
stuff
hear what you're
around.
saying. You're right. That's a really you really that's like you hit on like a really interesting point. So, I mean like do you I mean have you needed to like have some therapy? If this is too personal, you don't need to answer. No, seriously, because
You ask.
I actually like I'll tell you why I bring this up, because I've done lots of talk therapy myself, but like later in my later life, I've been doing more of what is, called somatic therapy, where you, instead of talking about like kind of telling the story about how something hurt you, you actually go into the place in your body where the trauma sort of lives, and you are just kind of you're just sort of with that, and in a very compassionate witnessing way. And it's extremely effective. So when you were talking about that, I just thought about how, like you could be acting and like some trauma inside of you could get triggered. And that's why I was just asking about that.
I played around with it a bit, and the teachers, a really good acting teacher, will help you kind of like figure out how to use that a little bit, but caution you. My first instructor, I said, okay, here's an audition. It's for this really bad guy, and he does A, B, and C, and all of that. And my instructor said, well, okay, so That sounds like a good role. It doesn't sound like who you are, but here's, even if it's not, if it were in your casting, just realize that when you get parts like that, you need to be careful. You have to ask yourself, do I want to go there? But what kind of effects will that have going forward and all of that?
Interesting.
One of the key moments in my life that I go back to if I need to get into a very horrible place, and I can talk about it now because I think maybe that therapy that you just talk therapy, did you say? Where
Talk
you
therapy
feel
is like what we think of as sort of the our idea of sort of the traditional therapy, sitting in an office, maybe sitting on a couch and your therapist is in an armchair. Like if you've seen Monk, right? Mr. Monk and his therapist, that's talk therapy.
So what I do is I do I'll just call it meditative therapy if we can use that term, because I'll be lying down in bed. sometimes between the conscious state and unconscious state, but just lying down in bed any time of the day, doesn't really matter. And my storytelling and empathy and all of that allows for me to do things, and I think a lot of people can do this, and maybe they do. I can go to the ICU unit that my father was pretty much laid up in, with tubes in and out of everything, and he had just had esophagus cancer surgery, and if he's I was told if he swallows, he could die and all this other stuff. He wanted to see every single one of us one by one to talk to us, because he thought, I could be dead in an hour or something like that. In my mind, that's my brothers and sisters, they probably had different stories to tell, different things to tell, and all of that. I'm 27, 28, so I'm not a kid. I'm not like a 12-year-old or whatever, which would be a different way of, I'm sure, a different mindset. But this news to us, because it was like, I had no idea it was going to be like this. You walk in, and I'm sure some of your audience are going like, I've had that moment too, and everything. So if I need to go into a place where I need to really get myself out of where I'm at on set, or these days it's more like in class, because you only get a job every once in a blue moon when you're union. I'm union. You don't get jobs that much, but you still work on it the whole time.
Sure, absolutely.
And I can put myself into just very weird places with instances like that. People can do the same thing with loss of a pet.
Oh yeah, oh my God, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. That's a horrible,
It
horrible
is really
situation.
horrible. Yeah,
But
believe
it's
I've
not a matter of it being horrible. It's empathy on
yeah.
demand.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. I can certainly, it's very easy for me to go back. Not that long ago, we had to euthanize one of our cats, and it's wrenching. It's just wrenching. And it's in some ways it feels worse than with a human being because, like your cat or your dog, they trust you. Like they absolutely trust that you're going to take care of them. And it's just, I feel anyway.
No,
As you can tell, David,
I get it.
I've been
So
triggered.
my point of bringing it up is that in my line of work, this is why actors are kind of looked at a little bit like, oh, you really want to go there or whatever. Sometimes there's superficial acting. There is, and it's wonderful, and you just do it. And sometimes the acting is walk down that way and cough or something. I mean, it's just not the big deal. But sometimes if you're in the middle of a play, or if you're a lead of a play, or if you're in and the play has dramatic moments and it's taking you here and it's taking you there. Even more so if you have to do that 20 times in a week, as opposed to, take five on set for something, you have this empathy on demand kind of a thing.
So it does sound kind of like mental health, mental, I don't know if I want to use the word hygiene exactly, but taking care of your emotional self being able to sort of like reset and go to neutral sounds pretty essential.
It's really essential, and in class, especially at the place I'm going with right now, it's Beverly Hills Playhouse. The key word to that is playhouse, because that they have a stage and you're doing scene work. If people have seen the show Barry, you see all these students and they get up on the stage and they do something in front of Henry Winkler, who's playing the character of the acting coach and all of that. And that's part of what you're doing, is you're practicing turning it on and off.
Yes, right.
It's very fascinating. It's a big psychological situation.
So, like as you're speaking, like the phrase that just popped in my head was actors have to be sort of like emotional, maybe emotional and mental athletes in some ways. Like, oh, and by that I mean like an elite athlete, right? So, somebody, because an elite athlete, they're elite because they have an enormous amount of control over their performance, because they practice so hard, they work so hard. And it sounds like actors do the same thing, but it's not the muscle that you're working is more of your emotions and your psyche and that type of thing.
So that brings us back to casting. What if they cast somebody to do some sort of emotional situation that that person can't really get to, even if they have all this huge experience of acting behind them, all these shows and everything? But what if you grab somebody who maybe even is relatively young in acting, and you put them into the situation, and they're able to pull it off because, hey, they've had that in their life.
Right.
Yeah, acting is not pretending.
Right. The other thing I was, well, the other thing I was thinking about actually was like the origins of acting, and I might be wrong here. I'm just I'm not like I don't whatever I'm just gonna spit it out. My belief is it came out of the Greeks, right? The Greek plays and having the chorus. It was sort of like they had stories, like the Greeks had their mythology and their histories, and they brought them to they brought the history to life basically. And that I think was sort of like at least the origins of like the type of acting we think of now.
The type of where there are words written down and there's drama and there's all of.
Yeah.
I'm going to say yes. I'm sure that there are anthropologists or whoever who would say something like, okay, well, when you're doing this sacred dance to appease a spirit of such and such, and it's that's still something you're memorizing, something to say to somebody, and you're not pretending, you are acting it out, and you are being part of that. But to your point, bringing it in a way that is written, in the storytelling format that we're talking
Yeah,
about,
it's like
that's separate.
you're bringing the history or the mythology to life for the audience. It's actually giving them an experience of it, So it's not like you're reading about it. It's not like somebody is telling you the story. You're actually watching the story occur. And that's really powerful.
It is powerful, and I think that the Greeks probably started for the Western world. I don't know about the Eastern world, where that had come in from. I do see a separation because of the way that how we think in terms of Western thought and Eastern thought.
Yeah, I know you're right. The traditions are a little bit different. But hey, most drama,
That's for a
most
different guest. That's for somebody who knows that stuff, huh?
But
It's very
like I was just
required.
like thinking like like any plot that is being done, the Greeks probably did some version of it. They
Yes.
had all those basic conflicts down pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's only seven stories to tell. I think that's what Joseph Campbell's.
But we never tire of hearing them.
Oh, no, not at all. And I think that they're there because we have a certain capacity. We have a certain thing where something becomes gibberish when it goes out of the realm of how we can talk to each other and tell stories and bring people in. We call that bad writing.
Nicely said, David.
Lots of bad
That was a good
writing.
one. That was a good one. Well, it is, alas, there is a lot of bad writing out there. Every once in a while, I'll watch a movie, and everything seems to be like they've got some good actors, the plot's interesting, you know, all this kind of stuff. And you just can't get into it, you know? And it's just sort of like, that was just a sucky script, you know? Just the script sucked.
It usually happens when there's confusion put into it. Confusion with multiple writers, usually. Multiple things like, we need to put this product in here. We need to, like, somebody out of the blue will say something about a particular product name or something like that. And I think the best ones who do that, that I've recently have seen, are the Big Bang Theory, where they bring in all of this product, all of these celebrities, all of these guys, but they're within the realm of what the central characters are all about, so it makes sense. But every now and then you'll get somebody to bring in something, a product placement or whatever, and you're going like, that's annoying.
It's super obvious, right?
Oh yeah. It's like, anyway, yeah, it gets sort of too many people, but who's putting the money up for it? All of a sudden becomes more of a writing situation instead of what the writers had originated.
And there probably wasn't like a clear vision for what they wanted to accomplish.
Maybe. I think that it's more like losing its way. I mean, when you're going to put in the smallest budget for a movie, $2 million, $3 million, is just a tiny little, we can't really afford too much, but it's a passion project almost. And then, people are going to invest their money after reading the script, after getting an idea of who's going to be involved, and it gets to be something like, 40 million, 100 million, or whatever that individual people are putting into it, or companies or whatever. It gets to be like, we're going to spend 3 years on this film.
It's a huge investment.
It better say something. And then it failed. And it's like, it failed. Mulan, I'm sorry. Mulan is it has a formula that is not supposed to fail. And I know the COVID, but people are not moaning and groaning about the COVID part. In China, I just read an article that in China, they're like, what happened to the girl who wasn't prepared? This girl is totally prepared to take on the Mulan, I'm telling
Mulan.
now the name, Mulan's ability to go out and kick butt. What happened to the one who did it from the heart in the animated series, who just basically went with more of a heart and less of a, well, I just have the skills to do it, so I'm just going to do it.
Yeah, it's a I think there's sort of most entertainment art craft is there's like two chunks, and there may be more than two chunks, but for me, two chunks makes it convenient. I think there's sort of the outer things, so I'll call that skills, money, resources, time, all that stuff, you know, the stuff you can measure pretty easily. And then there's the chemistry. And there is the you that's why I said like when the stars align, because you've got the right people, the right script, things are working, but they're working because there's a little bit something more, you know, like there's just what each person brings to the table, and all of that stuff comes together in a really cool, magical way.
what really opened my eyes were first thing I wrote that was a feature film. We did a table read. I'm gonna say I wrote it, but actually I didn't. I was with four other. It was a group of four people. They had the idea. They wanted to do this and that, and I just came and wrote it and put the dialogue and put a bunch of things into it that I thought were really, really cool. And then got to the table read because of what all four of us liked, and that was great. Then somebody after the table read said, "You know, that was really great, but the structure is weak." And I thought, "Okay, structure is weak. What's structure?"
Yeah, that would have been my question as well.
And then I went online, like everybody else, and there's 1,000 amazing screenwriters who have all of this beautiful work behind them, and they talk about structure. And there's this wonderful book called Save the Cat. And Save the Cat is a very thin, wonderful book from a wonderful a screenwriter who basically says, okay, at this time, at this juncture, somebody must die. At this, or the equivalent, at this juncture,
Oh, I
we
see.
have, and Save the Cat is the first intro into any movie is why do we care about the main character? Why do we care if that person lives or dies or completes their whatever? Well, we see them do something like saving the cat. They're so sweet, they're so strong, or they're so whatever that we want them to succeed. Like in Mulan, we want her to, we see that.
So, in
And
other
why?
words, you are emotionally and energetically invested in the character.
And then you bring it all the way through for in a very structural way. You're hitting things properly that will allow for that form of storytelling to work out, just
I
like
see.
anything else,
Sure,
right?
sure. Yeah, it's like the there, I don't know if you've ever seen this. There's a theory. It's in presentation, when you do a presentation, and it's called the spark line. And the spark line is like showing you the emotional, like where your audience is emotionally. And so, like, you can think about it as sort of the hero's journey is like a really great example of that, where, like you have somebody and they're faced early on with some sort of a conflict, which is above and beyond their current abilities to kind of like take on. And so like there's this kind of like the spark line kind of measures the kind of tension, whether it's positive energy or it's negative energy and that type of thing. And so the spark line is, I think, what you're talking about when you're talking about structure.
Well, let me ask you about that talk therapy that you talk about. Is there a structure to that?
Only in scripts. I think a lot of talk therapy is storytelling. But the storytelling in talk therapy, one of the challenges that I personally have found with it is that you can tell your story and you can tell your story over and over and over again, but your story can be a victim story. It can be like an Eeyore story where it's just sort of like, oh, well, things just, you know what I mean? Like things just never work out for me. I'm born to lose, like that sort of thing. And the first couple times you tell that story to a compassionate therapist, it's really good because a compassionate therapist will witness it and at least kind of like help you realize like, I'm not a bad person. This didn't happen to me because I'm, wrong or something like that. Like this person is hearing me and they're hearing me with compassion. And that feels really good. It feels really good to be witnessed. But at some point, you have to like move past your story. And that's the hero's journey. Like if you don't, like the hero's journey is where you come up against that obstacle. And because of the gods or because of your mentor or Obi-Wan Kenobi or whatever, they, like your community, there are things outside yourself that help you meet that obstacle and you become smarter, wiser, better, maybe sadder, but you're still a better, wiser human being for it all. Yeah. Where a lot of people, instead of moving past, they just kind of get stuck in this victim cycle and they never get out of it. And, you know, that's me. I mean, that was me in a lot of issues, which is why I thought somatic therapy was so powerful for myself. Because until you really, because trauma is one of those weird things, like it's, everybody has it. It doesn't matter if you have fought in a battle or not. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, you know, like you were abused or you were not abused. People just, like, our bodies just react to stuff that happens to us, you know, primarily when we're small and we have no ability to explain things away. And then it just kind of lodges in us. And so quite often, like we were talking about with acting, stuff happens and we just get triggered. And when we get triggered, it's like we just kind of go into that state of like reaction, you know, like something happens and we're just like being angry is like, you know, I hear Donald Trump say something horrible and it's just like, oh my God, you know,
well, when you hear anybody go against, the purpose of a villain is to evoke those kinds of those kinds of things. I was watching a James Bond, the next one that's coming up, the trailer for the next James Bond.
I don't remember the name of it.
Permission to Die or whatever.
Okay.
Do you know what it is?
I don't remember the name of it, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I actually just watched Casino Royale over the weekend, so.
Even that one, that works out just as well, but it is kind of like the villains being, seeing the world in a way that is beyond just a crime here and a crime there. They see the world in a way that is, it is their world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's and a really good way to say it, David. You're right.
Yeah. Those are the cruelest and the meanest and the really, you know, because I mean, if I go back to who is in charge, you know, who is trying to not only take over, not only fight a little bit, but take over everything.
They're a criminal man. That's like, you know, the criminal mastermind as opposed to just, you know, like the opportunistic thug.
And it's not alone. It's with everybody on that side of the fence going with it.
Yeah.
And that it's great.
Oh man, that's a great way to say it. You're right. And it makes it feel existential.
It makes you feel like, what is reality? Where am I? Is this world? And that's one thing that's a dream for a, there you go. There's a dream for the screenwriter is to hit that kind of moment. But I think it's it puts people at ease. So when the hero comes back to win the day, they've actually won something.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's a really, boy, oh boy, I could just keep talking to you because this is really interesting stuff, you know? No, I mean, really, you know, like this, all of this, I love this. I'm loving our discussion. I'm going to just like ask you, what kind of, do you think anything much about like what kind of a legacy do you want to leave? What do you hope that you'll be remembered for?
The parent in me wants to say, if my son is happy, then my legacy is that.
Yeah, I understand.
The actor in me is, if I devastate somebody, that's a good, no.
No, but I hear where you're coming from.
Yeah, I want to be known as a good graphic designer, as a good illustrator, as a good, you know.
But how do you define good?
That I did my job. I think that's a lot of what people can do. I mean, I guess I'm not going for the overkill. the greatest actor. Oh, those third Oscars were really, that's when you start getting bored with it.
But you know what's funny, David? Like, do you think how many great actors do you think really went for being great actors? Like
There,
I don't think that was their goal, do you?
I think when you get in that realm and everything, you're a great actor. But what you may not know is that there's probably 1.5 million great actors. Those people who win awards are the great actors who know that there are another 1 million or 2 million great actors on the face of the earth who are doing other things, who have decided to do other projects, who were not picked up by certain studios, who did not find that project that allowed for them to be seen in an Oscar-winning situation. But I am surrounded in my acting classes, and I'm surrounded by, if you go online right now to all the indie films and all of that, you're seeing millions of really great, top-notch, extremely great actors. Oh my God, they're great and everything. And to be part of that, I'm not considered a really terrible actor. I'm considered to be pretty good. To be considered pretty good is to be, that's, there you go. There's my legacy. That's why I wanted to be a part of that, acknowledged as a part of that. And I can die. You know, it's okay. I can't die now. Yeah, whatever. It's like all I wanted to begin with is just be pixelated. That's all. I just wanted to be have a couple of pixels, make my face, that make a screen, and it's me being in a film and all of that. Out in LA, it's pretty easy to do that.
It seems courageous to me, David, to do that.
Courageous or needy?
Courageous, courageous was the word that came to me because,
Appreciate that.
well, just because to leave a, it, I mean, in my opinion, a successful career in graphic design, which is not easy, you know, I mean, I know it's not easy. And then to like just go into something entirely different. I do understand what you're saying when you say, you know, I was at a point where I could rebuild or I could do something different. Because I, as a tech writer, when the dot-com burst happened, I all of these jobs just totally dried up. And I had a point where it was like I can really work my ass off and do everything I can to keep my skills fresh, to keep, you know, like to really keep the connections fresh, all that. You know, like I knew I could do that. And stay because I assumed, you know, this was just like a downturn and there'll be upturns and there'll be opportunities and, you know, like, do I want to do that or do I want to just do something different? And I made the decision to do something different. But it took courage to do that. I don't know, maybe I was so burned out too. I was just like, I just can't do that, dude. I just got to do something. So maybe you were just really burned out.
Aren't we supposed to have different careers anyway? Somebody.
I think so. If you're going to live until the age of 80, I would hope so. Right? You know, I think that old idea of, you know, you get a job at the company and, you know, you work there for 30 years or whatever, and you retire and you get your gold watch and you play golf for another 10 years and drop dead of a heart attack, you know. People just are living longer.
Yeah, and I think that that perished with our generation. I really do. I think that that faded away with all of the different environmental and economic and all of that. I think that
Yeah, I
I
agree.
know what the mindset of a 18-year-old is right now, looking at the world of COVID and climate change and all of the challenges and all of the opportunities that are
Exactly.
being out there. I mean, we
That's the thing people miss is there is a lot of really scary stuff happening without a doubt. But there's also a lot of, I mean, I look at, like when people are bemoaning, like the fossil fuel industry, which is, like that was a thriving industry for like centuries. And it's like, you know what? Time to do something different. And there's a hell of a lot of opportunity in renewable energy. I mean, it's huge.
My dad was a petroleum geologist, and his ability, his talent was going out and finding with high probability oil and gas. Sometimes he found water and salt, and sometimes whatever. But he had a good run as a independent business owner. And all of that, but it's like, these kids are now seeing rockets going up sometimes 2 a week, and now it's a global race to get satellites up and to the moon and to Mars. I'm watching a movie called, oh, I mean, a mini series on Netflix called Away, and it's about going to Mars. And it's just very, it's a moving, wonderfully written script, and the actors are great, and but it's actually putting you there in a way that is really sensible and not Star Trekky, but like nuts and bolts with human relationships. Interesting, you know.
Yeah, no, I that's kind of, I had a teacher who once said, the more problems you have, the more opportunities you have. I was,
Yes.
that's a really, I always thought that was like a really good way to look at things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. And it sometimes is going to take a little bit of effort to move past the, oh, this sucks, like poor me, right? I mean, like you have to do that, but then once you get past it, hopefully with some other people, you can say, okay, we've got a problem. What do we do? What do we do about it? So it's I think it's a good, this is like a good note perhaps to end our talk on is I mean, I do feel that way about the world when I'm in a better, when I'm in a relatively good place. So David Veal, thank you so much for the time you spent with me.
I appreciate it. This was a great talk. It was a lot of fun.
Although I was really hoping like we'd make each other laugh a lot too.
Oh, shoot.
We'll have to, so we have to do another, right?
Hey, if you need
Yeah,
to be turned off.